This episode of the Not a Hebrew Cast is brought to you by Bishop Seller.
Bishop Seller.
Did we talk about while we were, before we get into talking about Bishop Seller, did we talk about how, like, it's still the 902 Brewcast, even though we are not in Nova Scotia?
We're still 902, though.
Yeah, we are still 902, that's what I'm saying. We didn't have to change our name or anything.
No, nope.
Okay, I love Bishop check Seller.
Yeah. My wife hates Bishop Seller because I always make her go to Bishop Seller anytime we're within striking distance of Halifax, every single time.
That's the best.
And I come out
ever.
With multiple boxes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
$20.
$20 so rule. yeah. Well, I guess that's pretty much it
right there. Yeah.
That's our advertisement. If you spend $150 online, you'll get all of your stuff shipped anywhere in Nova Scotia for free.
Yes.
Bishop Seller. All right, welcome to the Nat2 Brewcast. This is Tony with me, Kyle, and Phil.
Yes.
Indeed.
We're still, I don't know, it's been a while. We're still on Prince Edward Island.
We are.
3 weeks later, 4 weeks later.
Yeah. So you're here with Josh Mitch. I got it.
You got it. Nailed it.
I try so hard. And Island Hop Company, right?
That's right, yeah.
I'm just making sure the name was right, too.
Yeah.
It's been a long day.
Yeah, I bet. You guys are up. I saw the post from 5 a.m. this
yeah,
morning.
Yeah.
Phil dragging you guys by your bottom jaw.
Pretty near. Yeah, it was...
I didn't think they were going to go through with it, but they did. I was impressed.
I still don't understand Phil's transformation into a morning person. It boggles the mind.
It's the hot tub.
Maybe that's it, because...
It does, because it knocks you out as soon as you go
on the way,
it,
so. You know, we used to leave New Brunswick or PEI, we'd do episodes, and, like, Tony and I are up just, like, waiting around the hotel or the rental house, be like... When's this guy getting up? And now it's no problem at all.
Yeah. We'll see how that goes tomorrow.
We got if you're not careful, you'll get a farmer on
the
your
ferry spook. Yeah. Sounds like it. He's going to switch careers, I think.
So we are here at Mount Albion, right?
Yep.
On Prince Edward Island. We're here at the, like, being set up as we yeah. visit our in between things.
Yeah.
The hop farm.
The Nathan yep. Hop Yard, yeah.
So... can you tell us a little bit about, sort of where you're getting started here on the island?
This isn't your first
yeah.
kick at the hop can.
Yeah, used to be named Darling's Island Farm, which was outside of St. John. That was a 2-acre research facility. So when we started into this 6-7 years ago, the question of whether or not hops were a sustainable crop were the number one question. Like, can we produce hops and make a profit? So you got to figure out yields. You got to figure out which varieties produce the right aromas and flavors. I know we were talking about the Sriracha Ace thing. Mm. So at the start, we started with 17 varieties, bringing in the parent varieties every year and kind of comparing, doing triangular aroma tests, figuring out which varieties we could grow that any brewer would want in their beer and a beer drinker would want to taste when they're drinking said beer.
Yeah.
And we narrowed it down from 17 to 6. And that... Thankfully for me and my weird accent was German varieties, so it was nice that I could finally only have to pronounce the German hops. It was nice, yeah.
Because you said, like, just because you were hitting specs that you needed to hit,
yep.
ultimately you weren't getting what you would expect from that hop, right? You said you'd bring in Sriracha Ace from
yeah.
Japan, it just wasn't the same,
yeah.
even though you were hitting what your targets might
yeah,
have been.
Yeah, so productivity is really important, so yield, essentially.
Yeah.
And then you have your balance of input and output, so how much does it cost you to keep the plant healthy? And because in the Maritimes, you have a lot of disease pressure and a lot of insect pressure, so... and we're really, really strongly committed to what's called biological farming, so that means using as few or none of the nasty chemicals as humanly possible. So learning when to time these interventions is really, really important. Because, I mean, you could get, like, my 9-year-old could use a neonic and wipe out aphids, you know.
Right.
It's, you just, oh, there's an aphid, boom, they're gone.
Yeah.
But, like, also, so are the bees and some beneficials and Satan, I think, start rising up out of the ground. So, thanks for using our chemicals. But at the end of the day, like, you don't want to do that. So figuring out, like, what that balance was is really critical. But let's just say, like, there was 5 hops that produced like crazy, were actually relatively inexpensive to grow. But at the end of the day, the triangular test failed. And so I also do a fair bit of test brewing. So we would then do test brews, and I put it out to my panel, myself included, and we'd be blinded. And, like, for instance, we did a Cascade beer. We did a straightforward American pale ale, bittered with Columbus and late hopped with Cascade, and compared it with the exact same beer, which is late hopped with Cascade from Yakima and one from the Willamette Valley. And that we finished the test, and my wife looks at me and she's like, well, the good news is we could pick out our hops really easily. The bad news is our hops suck. You know? So like, you know what? Even though like it was producing like crazy, yeah, and like it was, you know, Downey was a bit of an issue, but was controllable. It's like, that's just not what we want in our beer. So at the end of the day, that Cascade lost out. And that process takes time, right? And it was 5 years. And as I was mentioning, really close to $1 million of investment. It's been good, great experience. You know, I've had the real humbling fortune of being invited to speak in the U.S. and other places on that process and how you use investigation and science to improve your business model and stuff. We've published a couple of papers. Our third one's just coming out next month in the Master Brewers ARCA MBAA Technical Quarterly. So a lot of good things have happened, but at the end of the day, the important information is these are the hop varieties that we can grow well. We can grow them responsibly. We're not reliant on nasty chemicals all the time, and we can produce it at a profit. And so then we knew, go to our investors. We got an investor group that's all within our family. So so it's still a completely 100% family-owned farm, because my family comes from Central Europe, like the Ukraine, Poland area, which used to be German speaking. It's not anymore. Mm-hmm. And we're all committed to us getting back to our agricultural legacy. So I got 3 generations of support to make all Amazing. This happen. So
yeah, you're saying your grandfather was...
yeah, he taught me everything I knew. So I had a really unfair advantage because I had a really angry man who would really let me know when I was doing something wrong. So he guided the whole process, often like sending pictures back and forth and on the phone with him. You know, he lived to, he was 97, so had him around a long
yeah.
time. And really grateful and blessed for that. But yeah, this is me just trying to get back to what we did for, as far as you know, hundreds of years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice. So why here?
So if you look at the Maritimes and you take the heat map, the wet map, in areas where you get the what's called degree days, growing degree days, which is a heat unit, basically. There's 3 areas in the Maritimes that suit hop growing. It's an area exclusively owned by the Irvings in New Brunswick and McCain's, the Annapolis Valley, and Eastern PEI.
Okay.
So those are our 3 areas when we're like, hey, we're really going to step this up. I'm gonna turn my back on my other career. Like, we're doing this. The only way to make this profitable is to make sure we maximize the land and maximize the climate. So
yeah.
That was our 3 areas. My MP made the mistake of inviting then Agricultural Minister Lawrence McCauley to visit my farm and see my evidence-based farming practice. And he took me aside at the end and said, if you ever want to come to PEI, let me know. And both him and everyone within agriculture PEI, people within the brewing community on PEI, have... like been ridiculously supportive and nice, and everything they said they were going to do, they've done, which puts the pressure on me.
Yeah.
I got to do everything I said I was going to do.
It's your turn, man.
Thanks a lot, you jerks. That's not taking anything away from New Brunswick. We loved our time there. I mean, like Wendy at Big Tide Market Loyalist and Stephen at Grim Ross. I mean, these are the whole reason I'm standing here talking to you guys, really, is those people have had my back through really bad times and good times and some really terrible hops.
Yeah.
You know, there's several other breweries as well. Like now Two Crows is working with us. Kelly Robertson there,
yep.
Shipwright, and lots of inquiries and the whole maritime community as a whole. So I'm not saying this is a PEI, this is a maritime operation, right? 'Cause I wouldn't be here without those people.
Yeah, we were talking on the way in. I know the Milos at Two Crows was your hops from New Brunswick.
Yeah. We did a blend, blend for Jeremy, and you guys know Jeremy, how humble he is, and here's this like award winning brewer, and we're sitting down. He's like, so what do you think about this? What do you think about that? And he being like, What are you talking about, Jeremy? Just tell me what you want, and I'll try not to screw it up, you know? But it was super collaborative. And in the first beer, there's some stuff that we tasted. We're like, you know what? We can maximize this flavor a little bit more. Mm. Like, the field berry's there, but I want to introduce this other blending hop into the mix to try to boost that. And it worked out. And here's Jeremy, like, saying, absolutely. Like, let's do that. Which is like... Like when I opened the first Milos 2, I was like, oh, dear God, dear God, dear God, dear God. Let this be good. And it wasn't terrible, but yeah.
That was good.
It's a great one. I still have a few left, I think.
Do you? Coming to your house.
Not with me presently, but.
They're gone. Like everyone I know just like.
Yeah.
Yeah. My family, unfortunately, really likes light lager beers. So yeah. Milos is just
not
gone.
A style you.
Yeah, they don't hang around long, that one, no.
Gone.
No.
No, I keep buying, like, those type of beers, and then I'm like, oh, I also buy other beer, and then, like, I just drink the ones, and the light ones, and I just have to keep replacing them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Big time.
Yeah.
Keep reaching past the double IPA. I'll have another Pilsner, please.
Yeah.
Although I do like a good double IPA. There's no question about it.
Don't get me wrong.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Ow. So you said it was a two acre?
And yeah, 2 acres. Yeah, yeah.
So this is significantly bigger than 2 acres?
Yeah, yeah. we're going to be at 25 acres in the next 5 weeks. And
just like that?
Yeah, like a big old hop bomb. Just.
You said like there's literally like people on their way here.
Yeah,
they
left Michigan. So
did they bring their paperwork?
Oh, like we've got a mountain of paperwork. This getting them here, COVID tried to end my business. If you guys look at all the gray hair on my head and like that guy's not even 40 yet, it's my children do most of that gray hair work.
Yeah.
But this hop,
COVID responsible
COVID,
for a little bit?
COVID really was up there. The went all the way up to the agriculture minister, and again, this is like. The number one priority is always taking care of Islanders. I'm a physician, so first do no harm is a huge thing for me, as it should be and needs to be. And so it took about 6 weeks just to figure out, can we do this in a way that makes exposure for Islanders like 0%?
Mm-hmm.
And it took 6 weeks to figure it out. My wife is listening to this like... we're still married somehow, thanks to her, I guess. But we figured it out. And once we figured it out the chief public health office approved our plan, the agricultural minister, Adam McLean, Will Proctor, all these guys in PEI were like, if you have her approval, you have our approval. And we support you 110%. And, you know, it's in sometimes in life, you know, like you're fighting to make things happen, and we've all been through that in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes things just, people see what you see, and they recognize the things that you recognize. And, you know, like, what was it in 30 Rock? Alec Baldwin? Synergy.
Yeah.
But they're like, it's like everyone's just, on, you know what I mean? Like, everyone's behind us, and like from all three provinces. And so it's happening. Like, they're on their way. They left Michigan, I believe, like, literally, I was talking to Alex Wiesen of Empire Hops, just as you guys were arriving.
Yeah.
That's what I was in the motorhome doing. And the four double-loaded semi-trailers with poles and German barbed wire cabling and anchors and all that stuff is on its way.
On its way.
Yeah, as we speak, yeah.
And so hops are annual?
So they're perennial below the ground, annual above the ground.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so there's a large central crown.
So do you... Anything that's coming up right now, you don't. Do we know? Will there be a yield this year of that stuff?
So, in our experimental yard, there's going to be
what we've got over there. Like you put like in 8 weeks ago
kilogram.
Or something. Yeah.
So no.
Yeah.
I just something to like you know something to show Wendy and Steven and Mark and and Chris and Spencer, just to, like, put under their nose, yeah, so they kind of know that, like, I'm still alive and not under a rock, yeah, somewhere. But that's about it. Yeah.
Right on.
And we'll because those are all experimental varieties, they're like, so the process we did in New Brunswick to get us down to the six, like, that's constantly ongoing, with a plan to start a breeding program in the very near future. So I have a consultant who is in the United States, works with major hop farms in New Zealand, and in the U.S. is an expert on hop breeding. He's plugged in, and we're already started working on some projects to start a breeding program. So we come up with a truly maritime hop.
Right.
That's, you know, so there's lots of native hops around, and Aaron Mills, if you're listening, Aaron, like, absolute father when it comes to all of this. And again, enormously supportive. Like, I literally stayed at his house during that 8-month period when I was between New Brunswick and coming to PEI, and there's been a couple of dark days between then and now, and Aaron's always been, you know, the first one to text me or call and say, yeah, Josh, just, like, keep going, man, like, you got this, like, just keep going, come to PEI, we need you here, and blah blah blah. And so, you know, having Aaron to work with, and now with Ag Canada, now we're in the final stages of finalizing an agreement with the USDA. We'll be the first hop farm outside of the U.S., as far as we're aware, to be working with the USDA in variety development and commercialization.
It's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, you know what? Like, again, like, this is just an amazing community. Once you get to a certain level within the hop community, what you see is people who have a lot of common interest. And make no mistake, the hop world is extremely competitive. Mm-hmm, it's mm-hmm. a commodity, right?
Yeah.
So,
oh, yeah.
So are potatoes. So is oil. So is water. It's a commodity, and there's forces that control what prices you can charge. And as we talked about, American farms can sell Cascade for $4 and still be making significant profit. And so if you're like, why did you grow the farm to this size?
Yeah.
It's for guys like you, Kyle. Accountants,
yeah,
and like knowing my cost of production, which took me 4 years to get, then figuring out this is what I can charge for hops. There's a curve, right? And then here's the curve where it gets close to $10 Canadian per pound.
Yeah,
which means when the hop market continues to be flooded, which it's going to do over the next couple of years, we'll be able to ride that out. Okay. In a way that's still profitable and sustainable, because hop prices are on their way down and continuing to go down. I was just talking to a guy in Michigan who's a close friend of mine, there's a guy from YCH who just sold hops at $4, no shipping, delivered to the brewery, Mylar packed, like absolute top quality, yeah, Cascade, yeah, you know. And so you got to get to that size in order to be able to, right, to be able to compete with, for me, more directly with German growers,
yeah,
Czech growers. Although I don't feel like I'm competing with them. We've shown with some research on the farm that our varieties do have some notable differences from their German parents. And in my mind, there's it's like a German plus. It's like, I'm not trying to replace what the Germans do, because, yeah, that's not replaceable in my mind.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Just like my grandfather smelled the hops that we grew the first time. He's like, it's nice. It's really nice. I like it. It's great. You're not totally stupid, but it's not German. You know, it's not right. It's not, you know.
Yeah.
And his like Ukrainian / German / Polish / Russian accent, which I can't even imitate. That was a really bad job. If my family are listening, I'm sorry. I butchered my grandfather's accent so badly. He's just like, this is just different, you know? This, yeah, is not the same. And so when you send it off for an expansive analysis, there's significant differences there. That I think make for like a Canadian lager, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So subtle, floral, like field berry, like minty, like all the things that we love in our lagers, but with a slightly different profile. So, you know, you use Shoreline malt in our hops, you know, you've got a product that's truly different from your standard German or Czech lager.
So, well, yeah, I guess, when you're finding those differences, is that all coming from just the soil here? the ground, or are you finding that there's some other things that are contributing to those different differentiating factors?
Man, I wish I could tell you that. There's some really... actually, on its way here from the U.S. is a bag of fungal inoculum. Mm-hmm. So, like, a very specific mix of a fungus, soil fungus.
Yeah.
Because research is showing that a huge amount of terroir is coming from the local biome.
Okay, yeah.
So what organisms are in the soil, how the soil is maintained, what the soil structure is like. Some really exciting research from the Hot Research Group. I'm a member and get to go every year thanks to some grants from New Brunswick and now PEI to go and get to go to these meetings and read these things. And there's a lot now moving in that direction of what organisms the plants are interacting with to determine how the plant performs. And so we're going to be doing a trial here. So our main field you saw, the 11 or 12 acre field, is going to be inoculated. And one field is not going to be inoculated. And so we're going to test to see if that's part of it. What I would never want to do is to bring in fungus that aren't local here, though they are. And there could be something really great about the PEI biome that's already here. Now, these are potato fields, so I'm willing to bet a lot of money that there is virtually nothing alive in the soil.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we were talking before we got rolling, that 12 acres that you have up there, it's all tilled in, but, you know, you said when you started it, there was
not a single worm. 12 acres, and, like, we're talking, like, a deep initial, like, reset button tillage, primary tillage is bad, but... primary tillage and not a single worm in 12 acres.
Unreal.
Yeah. Not, and again, as we talked about before, it's not a knock on potato farmers. This is responsible management for them. They have serious insect issues here on the island, and they need to do what they need to do to be able to make money to feed their families and stuff. So I'm not throwing stones.
No.
It's just there's a big difference between perennial agriculture and annual agriculture. And for hops, when you're looking at everything from the flavors you get all the way down to the disease resistance in the plant, I did do a study that we're hopefully going to be publishing that showed that different foliar applications at different times led to differences in the number of aphids per leaf that we found.
Really? Okay.
So plant health and the plant's ability to defend itself is like prime importance when you're looking at disease management. So my thing is, I never want to ever use a neonicotinoid, ever. The one that's killing all the bees. I never want to use any of those chemicals. Part of doing that is then turning around, investing money in research and figuring out how can we responsibly avoid this thing. Because at the same time, you know, Carly, I know you understand as an accountant, like money's got to move.
Sure.
So you got to make money to be successful. And sometimes you need to do things you don't want to. But part of this is the long-term game here is figuring out how do we support the plants in a way, starting with the microbiome, moving up to how we feed the plants, to trying to avoid all of these horrific things. Mm-hmm. The good news is, for us, the experiment has already started. Right in Germany, they've made a lot of these chemicals illegal to use.
Mm-hmm.
So it's forcing the most experienced, skilled, talented hop growers in that whole region of the world to find a solution. Right?
Right, yeah.
So, I mean, here I am in Canada being like, oh, I feel so bad for you guys because this is awful to just drop this on you. But at the same time, if there's a group of people that could figure this out, these are the guys and girls, you know? Like, these are the, like, there's these two growers, female growers in Germany who are like the two smartest hop growers I know. And I know they're going to find a solution that works. Yeah, so.
And then you've got the ability that you can use that here, right? Once somebody else figures it out, you're golden.
Yeah, and I share knowledge with them, and they share knowledge with me, and
I think that's how a lot of, certainly like the scientific community works, like in the agriculture, though, is that's where there's value in being able to share knowledge.
This is where COVID sucks, right?
Yeah.
Like, it really does, because, I mean, you can Zoom meet and stuff, and I've done it. It's a totally different...
Well, you were talking earlier about going to a conference every year. It's like a... Probably not this year, eh?
You know what? You know what? The best way to have friends and hang out is to get a little bit a little bit lit on some really good beer. You
yeah.
know? So you go to, well, the last meeting was in Portland, like no good beer there. Yeah. Right? Oh God. It's yeah. you have to check the ABV on every damn beer because they're all so smooth. The guy gives you the cup of this. It was this guy from Freem. He's like, Josh, try this out. I'm like, sweet. I was like, man, this is going down great. And it's like, whoa. I can't feel my face. And he's like, what is this? He's like, that's 9%. I was like, 9%?
It's like, yeah.
Where's the warning?
It's all fine till you stand up. It's like, yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
What am I supposed to do without my legs?
You've got a long way to fall, too.
Yeah man. No, that got a good laugh out of the crowd, but it's like, you know what? I think I need myself in a... like a Heineken Zero or something.
Yeah, yeah.
but that's how you meet stuff. And I know a lot of people are like, you know, Yakima Chief is bad, and like they're the big bad wolf, and they're like, man, those are great people. Those are great people who are. It's a business, and they got to make money, and they didn't design it this way, so they got to compete and do what they got to do to survive as a business. But man, those are really great people who love talking and love sharing information. And I've learned way more from Yakima Chief people than I've ever taught them with presentations and stuff. And it's the same with some of the German farmers, you know, because they're family farms, so it's a little different.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
And that's, these conferences are just like, you got to go, you know. So I'm hoping, you know, we can find a way forward. And this COVID thing kind of does what it's going to do, and we can get back to life.
But, yeah.
Because it's so essential for us, like for me, for this farm.
So you mentioned this is all going to be modeled after like the smaller German style,
yeah, yeah,
hop farms,
which is like 50 acres of production, which is where we're going to go.
Right. Okay.
So we'll be up to 50 acres at some point, and hopefully in the near future, and that really allows us to compete with anyone.
Yeah.
And we can get prices where they need to be, so really breweries of any size can work with us, and we want to work with them. And, you know, another place that's been very supportive, I know some people get a rash when I say the name, but Moosehead has been, and Andrew Olin himself has visited the farm several times, and we've talked multiple times. And
especially when you're in St. John, right? That's kind of...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, he was, yeah, very, but, like, above and beyond that was very, like, you know, when I told him, Andrew, you know, what do you think about me moving to PEI? He's like, does this mean I can get high quality local hops at a reasonable price? And I'm like, mm-hmm. Yes, it does. That's the whole reason I'm doing it. He's just like, this is awesome. We fully support you. You let us know when you're ready. Let's talk. We want to do this. Met with the procurement team, everyone. They're very, very forward thinking when it comes to procuring local ingredients where they can.
Yeah.
So are you growing them peppermint too? Or
Ooh. Ooh.
Now I will try to talk like a German to shift the focus away from the question about peppermint beer. I do grow Northern Brewer, which is a little minty.
Yeah.
Yeah, a hint.
That was more than a little minty.
What happened? Did I turn something on with my butt?
Yeah, you did.
You did. You turned on the radio.
Perfect.
Easy there.
You guys want to listen to some Carrie Underwood while we talk?
Hey.
And have a peppermint beer?
You never said no.
I feel like you're back in St. John already.
Oh, man. Well, we are in a motorhome, too, right?
We have a match.
That's all my fault.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man.
So, yeah, there'll be a production facility here as well?
Yeah. So, there's going to be a production barn, all automated, no touch, three-level, 30-foot concrete post structure with... all automated conveyors going into a bale, which are going to be stored, and we're going to pellet.
I was going to ask about that. Yeah, so they'll go to pellet once.
Yeah, we already own a pellet mill, the Lawson Mills pellet mill. If there's any other hop growers out there, they know about the Lawson Mills pellet mill. And as soon as I can afford to, we're going to be replacing that with a much better pellet mill.
Yeah.
It took 5 years to figure out how to make that machine do what we needed to do.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Ask Mike Doucette about how. Just straight up terrible the hops were initially. Aaron Mills, if you're listening, you also know how terrible. Spencer McGlant from Lone Oak also saw the ridiculously terrible Lawson Mills pellets. But I take partial blame as well. But anyway, so it'll all be, ultimately it's going to all be completely automated. So it's a food product. So we want no one touching the hops. We want it going through the process, all controlled by sensors and meters, with some central computers controlling it.
Any other kind of operation like that in Canada?
Yeah, so the BC Hop Company has something similar. I've never, they don't allow visitors, so I was out there and I visited multiple other firms in BC, but I think that would be the closest to this, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the total investment is going to be over $3 million, so you don't just, you know.
Right.
You're not just digging holes and slapping hops in the ground here. Like, there's a...
This has been, ultimately, I mean, this started 10 years ago when I decided to, we decided I wasn't going to do academic trauma surgery in Ontario. And I spoke, and my wife was like...
What was that moment?
So a really close friend of mine and his wife broke up. And they are the two nicest people you ever meet. And it destroyed her. And it broke my heart, broke my wife's heart. And 100%... that job turned him into something that he wasn't. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's so much pressure. And so I decided to go on something much more relaxing, like farming. No. We were just like, you know what? We don't want to raise our kids in Toronto. We're married. Like, I'm a Maritimer. She's from, like, Northern Ontario. Like, literally Letterkenny. It's like her hometown. She loses her mind because she's like, honest to God, I feel like I know everyone in this show. So she's a hunk of white trash like me, and we're just like, you know what? We belong isolated away from society in a rural environment where as few people as possible come into contact with us and her hick children.
In an RV on a farm.
Yeah, exactly. With Carrie Underwood.
Yeah, that's right. Whole deal.
Some pepperminty beer. So I said, you know, I call up my grandfather and said, you know, what do you think? He's like, well, do this smart. Grow a bunch of crops. Figure out which one suits you. He said to me, the evolution of the plant is... the ones that we cultivate is in line with humans. We're different than we were thousands of years ago, and so are the plants.
Right.
And he said the plants evolved to the people the same that the people evolved to the plants. And we put our first hops in the ground. I did barley. I did vegetable crops. Did a bunch of different things. And the kicker was my son, youngest guy, Thomas, who was four at the time. No. It's three at the time? Three. We're walking in the rows, and my grandfather's job, and with respect to the hop part, was watching his dad walk the rows, because hop farms are different back then, just because you had to be able to harvest them, so they go up single poles. And I said, you know, when you know the hops are ready, and he said, you can smell it. It's when you're walking the rows. So. And it's taken 7 years, but I definitely am at a point now where the positive predictive value of me saying these hops are ready versus where they are on the curve, because part of our research program was sending hops off once a week, every week, during when the harvest window opens, and you can see the different chemicals rising and falling. Hopsteiner gives you the targets. So you know, like for Northern Brewer, this is the alphas, this is the betas, this is the oil concentrations you want. So we know, okay, so in the third week of the harvest window is when we need to harvest Northern Brewer. So my four-year-old walks next to me, and he very politely says to me, he's like, Dad, these hops are ready. And I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, I'm teaching them German. And he, in his really broken little pipsqueaky four-year-old voice, was like, ich kann es riechen, which means I can smell it. I was like, smell what? And he's just like, it's different. So then I took the plants down, put them under the microscope, did the dry weight analysis, and it was like bang on. So I told
that's pretty sweet.
I told my wife this story, and she's like, what else do you do now, right? Like, my family's been doing this for a long time, and you know, it's like corporate knowledge and crows, you know, and all this stuff we're learning. Like, DNA is a crazy awesome thing, and knowledge is passed down in ways that we don't understand yet, and he's done that now three seasons in a row within probably 2 days.
Really?
I say, Thomas, tell me when it's ready, and he'll be like, yeah, it's ready. I'll be like, holy hell,
That's wild.
It is
so
wild.
What's the window you would have then?
Seven days. Yeah. It's 7 days. Which, when you have, so you're like, why are you doing this massive facility? And what's going, like, why don't you just start small and be more responsible?
I assume it's because you want him to have a job in the summer.
Exactly. He's the chef. Chef? So let's go. That's well, German for boss.
That's right.
He's their chef. Ich bin der.
You can't pay him dividends anymore, so he has to work in the company in order
this
to
guy! Split get him income. Off the air. My best friend Andrew works for the CRA. Andrew, if you're listening, it's all lies. This Kyle guy is a real piece of work. But no, so it's just like the idea is like we got to move. So I want to be able to go to. You know, ultimately, I want to be able to go to Two Crows or someplace. You know, they want to do Milosh as a regular thing, or let's say PI Brewing, for instance, a little beer called Beach Chair.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah. I pull up a chair fairly regularly. To be able to get my hops in their beer, I need to be able to sell it at a competitive price.
Yeah.
So you got to grow a lot of it, which means I got a lot of hops now to get through in 7 days. You have to stagger your windows. Which is why we have a second smaller dryer to do other, so we can be simultaneously doing varieties at the same time. And you've got 7 days to do that before the quality changes.
Yeah.
So, the facility, there's going to be two, probably Wolf 280 harvesters. So very large, high capacity harvesters that can, and the drying floor is going to be 12 by 12 meters. So, you know, you're looking at 400 to 500 pounds of dried hops per cycle of the floor.
Yeah.
So we'll be able to get through that amount in a couple of days quite easily.
What's the process? Like, I'm not super familiar with, say, vine to pellet. Like, what's that look like?
Yeah. So you walk through and your 6 year, 7 year old tells you the hops are ready.
stage one.
Yeah.
And if Chris is listening, I hope he better be listening. ACB Chris.
Yeah.
We're getting a HPLC machine from his company. We've already submitted the application, so we can testing on our own.
Great.
Mike Doucette is way overworked and underpaid, so love that guy. Once you determine that they're ready, we're on its way from Germany in a container ship somewhere between here and Hamburg is a picking wagon combination. So the tractor drives along, there's an arm that cuts the vine, pulls it, and drops automatically into the wagon, and you just drive, and it picks them, you wheel it around, and there my mom and my dad probably are standing waiting, and they grab the vine, the bottom of the vine that's about 20 feet high, you hook it up to a hook, it pulls it up and into this Wolf harvester that separates the chaff from the cones. Those cones go up a series of automated conveyors, it's called an autofiller. So it's a machine that goes along one side of the dryer, and it has sensors so it knows when the hops are at the desired height, the bed depth that we need. That's all been studied in St. John. We studied all of that. I custom designed and built the dryer there that mimicked the German system so we could study bed depth and all that to nail it. So we know exactly how deep that bed has to be and what the airflow needs to be and what the temperature and all that.
Right.
So then we turn on the blast furnace, it burns, it passes a lot of air, warm air across the hops. They go from 60 to 70%, depending, down to about 20%. It goes, drops a level, and it goes from 20 down to around 8%.
Moisture?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then it goes down to our conditioning room, which is a climate-controlled room with a relative humidity. Around 30 to 20%, depending on the relative humidity outside.
Yeah.
And then we let the hops slowly drip up to 9.4%. Then the system we have is going to alarm, and then it's loaded into bales, and those bales are stored. Those bales are kept until hops are ordered, and then they're pelletized.
Okay.
The system we're designing with New Ag Group, I just had a big call with them yesterday, is we're going to have a completely automated system where it goes straight into a pellet mill. So those are going to be pelleted, all automated, with one person at the end. So you have all this infrastructure. So you have four employees running this entire facility.
Right.
What that means is, you'll understand this, account guy, that we're not bogged down in low cost labor, right? We don't have 12 people, we have 4.
Right.
And what that means is we can get our debt down quicker, or we can now start investing in like a geneticist,
sure,
like an agronomist, like these people, high value jobs, people from the Maritimes, you know. And then we were arguing whether or not that'd be a human rights complaint if when we do start doing the hiring, it's like you need to be from the Maritimes. Is that a bad thing? Probably.
I don't know.
Because like Farmer Kevin, the guy that works at Inner Bay Fortune, the farmer, is like the coolest cat ever. He's from Ontario. So I'm like, you know what? I've started like maybe they don't have to be from the Maritimes, but the sentiment definitely is I want local Maritime people in these
like,
high-value
like
jobs.
Maritime people.
Yeah, coming back.
Sure.
Yeah.
Originally be
Maritime. Yeah, exactly. Coming and working and having a great job and helping us, you know, do crazy cool things like develop new varieties, like really dial the hops in, like improve our profitability, like, you know, allow us to lower our prices to make beer more affordable, local beer more affordable to brew so the brewers can make more money. And
right.
Yeah.
And so what, just going back a little bit, what's the timeline from like the buying wagon to a bale of hops? What's that?
It's about 13 to 14 hours.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Hours. Okay.
Yeah. Drying, depending on the relative humidity outside, is anywhere between 8 to 12 hours.
Right.
And that again, is all going to be sensor controlled. So, yeah, the computer knows when to drop the floors and stuff.
And you were saying you've also developed some kind of aging
rig? Yeah. Yeah. My dad is a Finnish carpenter. I love continental European beers, and age hops to me, the science behind aging hops is so awesome. It's really ester focused. So the esters, which are the flavor constituents, are essentially in the strig. So people are like, well, why don't you just separate the lupulin out every time?
Right.
And it's like, well, there's really important stuff in the leaf matter, right? So you've got, polyphenols, which help with head stability, and you have the esters, which if you look at Citra, right, a lot of the flavor profile in Citra is related to the esters in the vegetative matter. The highest ester producing hop in the world, as far as we know, is Citra. If you look at all these hops that you love for all the tropical flavor, so Simcoe, Citra, Mosaic, all the ones that just all have very high ester levels. Esters are a degradation product, fatty acids, these sorts of things. So when you let things sit or age, you get improvement. So if you're like, why do German and Czech brewers always open the bag of Sotzer the day before they brew to let the air go through? You're looking at allowing some oxygenation to happen on purpose to give these more rounded, fruity flavors from the hops that otherwise tend to be a little more spicy and kind of more phenolic.
Huh.
So the idea behind the drying, we're like, hey, this is just so cool. We got to do this. So we designed a dryer with an electrician. So we
what nationality was the electrician? You said your dad was a Finnish carpenter.
Yeah.
Swedish electrician?
That caught me for a second. And I was like, that does not make any sense at all.
Finnish carpenter. Fair enough. I just made it worse. He's from a crazy smart guy from Sussex, Andrew Tremblant. Crazy smart. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So it was just like, I was sitting there one day and he's just like, because he did all the electrical work for all the other projects we were doing. He's like, man, you're thinking about something. It's getting dangerous. And you're like, I smell smoke. I was like, I got to do this drying cabin. I don't know how to do it. He's like, let's look at it together. And we designed it. And actually, Lone Oak, Spencer has in the photo right now, has a beer that was finished with our H hops.
Okay.
As far as we know, that'll
be the Grisette?
I think it is the Grisette.
Yeah, he mentioned that on the
Last night. So that has our aged hops, and so that's the first beer that has our aged hops in it. And that was Sotzer. And when you taste it, it really as like the flavor profile is starting to land, because it changes rapidly over a couple of months, and then it starts to land, and you're like, hey, it's kind of smelling and tasting the same now month to month. It's like, this is not even the same hop, you know? It's just so fruity.
That's field so berry. Cool.
Yeah. It shifts. There's some, like, orange peel. So imagine those flavors, right? Like, orange peel, field berry. It's like, man, this is sounding like a really kick-ass seltzer.
So is it
because I know Phil loves seltzers?
Is it like experimentation with how long you would age?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have a lot to learn.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I dropped some aged hops off to Jeremy too, who immediately knows. You know, if anyone knows what to do with that.
Yeah, because he was aging some of his own hops. He's grown out in BC. I think,
it was in our first batch of In Theory. I think had some of the pilot batch. Yeah, he used that for.
Yeah.
Many moons ago.
Waste.
What are you talking about? Yeah. Liquid gold.
Yeah.
So it's a lot. I mean, like, we're really not there yet. So, like, when you look at, but, like, to quote my grandpa final time, to say, you know, like, you wanted to do hops, you're going to be poor, your kids are going to be frustrated, and your grandchildren, if everything goes right, are going to be rich. It's a direct quote. He's like, hops are a generational pursuit, right? So in my lifetime, my job is going to be to establish this farm, make it profitable.
Right.
Realistically speaking, understanding the aging process, like, I have a son who has an extremely sensitive palate, right? Maybe that's what, maybe Tom's lifetime is going to be figuring out aged hops, how to do it right, how to nail the target every time, you know, how to be able to tease different flavors out of different varieties for brewers who need it for a certain product.
Yeah.
So you have to really respect the generational nature of hop farming and what this means, and being arrogant enough to think you can do this in one generation is like a complete fool's errand. You
right.
Know?
Yeah.
It's my lifetime is spent, you know, getting up the capital and getting it started, and then handing it over to my sons and let them actually make this into something better. It's one of those things. I hope I'm alive long enough to see my grandkids, you know, really take it by the horns, you know, like the Vanco Farms, the potato guys I was talking about, like their third generation, you can see how they're really taking potato farming and they're pushing it. Like they're doing organic production, they're looking at different business modeling, like they're really doing something super special. And the only way to do that is to live it, right? And so, you know, what I'm gonna be able to achieve in my lifetime is extremely limited, and you go in knowing that, and I just hope, you know, that, you know, on my side, you know, I joked to Steven when this all started. I said, Steven, you know, I really hope your granddaughter or grandson is brewing with my grandson's hops, and it would just be crazy to be able to taste how awesome that beer would be, you know, to mount all that experience and drive into a product. And that's when you get to something like, this is now when Atlanta Canadian Brewing is like, now we're kind of playing ball with Germans and you know, long-standing growing regions in the U.S. This is when Atlanta Canada really turns into something that's like world class, although it's already an amazing scene in a ridiculously short period of time.
Yeah.
But these are the things that just take time, right? That's why beer is cultural.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Quick break in the action. Again.
How did you find a place to sit? Yeah. How did you find a stopping point in this episode?
It remains to be seen, I suppose. Maybe I.
Josh.
Maybe
Josh,
I didn't.
Hold on a second.
I need to.
We gotta pay for the trip to the island.
I also need to reset my brain.
Yeah, honestly.
Take a breather, grab a beer, think about it for a sec, and while you're doing that, remember our wonderful sponsor is Bishop Cellar.
That is true.
They are the best.
Yeah, you can check them out at bishopcellar.com. Sign up for all the newsletters to stay informed on what's going on. You can spend $150 on... I can't believe I almost messed up saying that.
never said it before.
So. I know. You spend $150 on the website. They will ship your product anywhere in Nova Scotia for free.
Free.
Load up on your beer, wine, and spirits for, you know, whatever you need. Pretty straightforward. But if you can get down to the store, you should do it. Say hi from a distance. Keep yourself safe. Follow all the rules and don't be a jerk.
Keep yourself safe and keep them safe.
Exactly.
It's not all about you.
No.
Truly.
But you can always ask for recommendations. I know that their social media account's pretty good too, so you can always fire a message off and hope for, you know, some good information. And I think recently, or maybe it was a couple months ago at this point, I even used the Bishop Cellar website to explain via the internet what New York Muscat was.
Yeah,
because they just had that information around the website. All I had to do was actually type NY Muscat, and would you believe that it was like the third Google result?
In Google, yeah. Bishop Cellar getting that SEO for sure.
I mean, yeah. Pretty great. It's almost like when you go in to talk about something, you want to be a little bit prepared.
Absolutely.
I don't know what that's like.
Yeah. Glass houses and all.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of ill-prepared, let's go back to us trying to wrap our head around.
Take a breath and let's go back.
Yeah.
Mentioned again for the third time, like with Spencer last night, like to think that he opened and he had beers that were like just Maritime beers from everything except for the yeast, I think. And now he's like working with Escarpment on some yeast.
Yeah,
right?
He's fixing that.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy? Doesn't that blow your mind? I when I started, like really 10 years ago is when the wheels started going.
Yeah.
At that time, as far as I know, there were some smaller growers and you know, Nova Scotia, like small growers. And Nick came on the scene, and then Veronica, and some other larger growers, which is awesome. You're just like, we're 20 years away from hops, from the hops that grow on this land. So in our my flavor research, looking at year-to-year variability and the maturation of the noble varieties, you say, well, why doesn't everyone grow Sotzer? I mean, this is like lager beers are in, like get on it. And it's like because you do not get flavor stability in these hops for 7 years.
Wow.
I know that because after farming them for 7 years, I finally got a hop that was consistent year over year.
Yeah.
Wow.
Do you think a brewer like that, like, you know, when my grandfather went to the fridge, and Tettnanger was always his favorite variety, always. And he could smell Alpine from across the room because it's Tettnanger. And he's like, if that beer is off even a little bit, right? Think of all the people that we know and love who drink Alpine like it's going out of style, would not want that beer, right?
Right, yeah.
That beer has got to be what that beer has got to be. Yeah. And so if you're going to produce the hops that they know are going to give them the flavor profile that that beer has to be, you can't do that with any hop that's less than 7 to 10 years old.
So is that like what the desired output point is going to be here? Or like when are you expecting to start seeing like continuous production? Are you there now? Or obviously you're not there now.
Yeah. So, the plants that we're putting in now, again, we hit the reset button, right? So when we were leaving New Brunswick, it wasn't just about giving up my full-time job that was quite lucrative. It was about, man, we are literally starting from scratch again when it comes to the actual performance of the plants. And not only, like, it'd be one thing if we were blissfully unaware, right? Just like, let's go to PEI and do this. You know, it's going to be great. Yeah. It's like, holy hell, we've now proven that we suck, you know?
Yeah. Now we know we're going to suck for a long time.
Like, we know. And so when people say to me, they're like, you know what? You know, I'm still going to Bathurst to practice medicine in the off season. Why? It's because that's continued capital investment. Like, yeah. this is going to be $4 million before things really get serious, you know, till I look someone like, you know, like Chris at PEI Brewing or like the larger production breweries, Moosehead or Molson Coors or whatever, look them in the eye and say, you like this beer right now with my hops in it? That's how that beer is going to taste every year.
Right.
Think about that. That's going to be when this happens. I'm just turning 40 in a couple of weeks. I'll be 50 before that even happens. So literally, like, I'm in the twilight of my hop career.
Yeah.
And this is where, like, my son now, I'm giving him a stable product to now as his base to work for it. And we've already got some plans to send him to Germany and learn and the Pacific Northwest to learn and come back and do stuff that I can't even dream of. But the idea is, like, this just takes time. And it takes patience. And it takes vision. And it takes a really, like, crazy intense amount of unwillingness to quit that drives your wife and your parents and your brothers crazy to say, like, why would you ever do that? You know, like, annual cropping is, like, you can see a benefit right away, right? Yeah. Nothing against the malt guys. Like, nothing. Because that's really, malting is stupid hard. But, you know, you don't have to sit there and wait for 7 years for these things to develop to know. Like, where's Sotzer and PEI going to land?
Right.
Ich habe keine Ahnung. I have no clue. right?
Yeah.
I know it's going to be somewhere reasonable, but where the final target is. So let's just say, for instance, like, and it, this isn't the case necessarily. It's also not the case, but in a beer like Alpine, what hop would we need to use to produce that flavor? I don't know. I've got 6 hops that produce that in that spectrum.
Yeah.
And is it Tettnanger here? Maybe not, right? Maybe it's Spalto. Maybe it's Santium, right? The USDA cross. We don't know. The only way to know is to do it. Have brewing partners with an equal shared vision, right? Who are like, hey, Josh, the next couple of years, we know there's going to be some variability. And in a product like Milosh, where, like, is a great example, Stephen at Grimross is also so good about this, as is Wendy and Mark. Mark particularly, Mark and I do research together and stuff too, which it kind of bolsters that. But where they're like, hey, Josh, there's going to be variability, and that's okay. Our drinkers like that, and we know when we sell the beer, we don't sell it like Alpine is sold. Right, Milosh is something that's sold. It's a different product. It's not even comparable to Alpine, right? Like, people like the variability. Oh, this one's a little bit more like that. And here's a guy who can put his nose in a bag, smell it, and has the experience and knowledge to know through the mashing process, through the dry hopping and all that. I know Jeremy knows what that beer is going to taste like based on what he's smelling in the bag. Because when we, the last 2 times we've done, smelled the blend and smelled it, and he's like, I know what this it's going to go this direction, and it has, right? And that's where working with a brewer like him to me, in several of them, in Maritimes, which is, you know, it's an embarrassment of riches, really, where you can say, okay, this is when things get really effing cool. Because, like, I did all the sensory training, the Cicerone and all that garbage, so that I can go and smell hops and blend them exactly the way I want to blend them. You know, the research project, another research project we've done is a lot of flavor preference research. You know, women between the ages of 19 and 50 are the fastest growing segment of the craft beer industry. Women have been ignored, and it's stupid.
Totally.
My wife is a super taster. And when she tastes beer, she can describe walking past flavors and is able to at one point in time consider multiple flavors simultaneously, right? And women do that where men can't. Like, that's a stated fact. It's just the way it is.
Yeah.
And so, like, when my wife tastes a beer and really likes the beer, it's like, okay, there's no defects in that beer, because if there was, she's gonna, like, instantly recognize it. And also, is the boss of me. So when Mama goes to the liquor store, Mama wants, Mama gets. And if Dad's like, you know what, I'm feeling kind of like, the Alpine reminds me of my grandfather.
Yeah.
I'm feeling like, you know, I really miss Grandpa today. It's killing me today. Like, I wish he was here. I need an Alpine. And she's like, you're getting Flora. She's like, I like Ken. Ken is such a nice guy. I love what they're doing. Ashley's wonderful. And he just posted a picture of a cat, and you're getting Flora. So, you know, and she tastes Flora and looks at me and just goes, ooh, Mama like it, you know?
Yeah.
And you're like
we've
what?
Done
like,
that.
We've really done a disservice, but I think now that people are kind of waking up to how the world works in an equitable society, I think what happens now is you get better beer, right?
Totally.
And
wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah. See what I'm saying? So then you're like, so here I am, like, blending and doing the stuff, and I know the brewing partner I'm working with, and the blends, again, are not random, right? This is me doing research and getting women between those age groups to rank flavors, getting an aggregate and saying, these are the 3 flavors women want. I blend my hops to get those flavors. Grimross has what's called a Grimross blend, which is direct result of me researching Grimross beer drinkers.
Amazing.
So these are the top 3 flavors women in that age group want. We need women input in brewing. We need more women in brewing. We need more women drink beer. We need more women as part of the process. Because who brewed beer in Prussia? Women.
Women, yeah.
My great-grandmother brewed beer. My grandmother, as far I don't know, she brewed beer or not, because the war threw everything crazy. But, like, you know what I mean? So, and then in two generations, we just kind of whitewashed it. And now it's like we're realizing, like, we are suffering because the people who for thousands of years brewed the beer are no longer brewing the beer as much as they should be, or tasting the beer, or enjoying the beer. So, to me, it's like... And women are super honest too. Like my sister-in-law, they're just like, Josh, this blend sucks. You're like, that was 4 hours, and like the steeps, and like then brewing it out, and my sister-in-law Allie, who's also a crazy talented taster, is just like, this beer sucks. Like rose petals are cool and stuff, but I don't want to be sucking on a rose hip when I'm trying to drink a light, refreshing beer. So, and then it's like, hey, back to the drawing board, right?
Yeah.
And then you work with someone like Steven, who's very forward-thinking, very socially conscious, who's into this thing. You know, this is then when you kind of, it goes to the next level, and you get feedback from people who really know beer, telling you, like, that they really enjoyed the beer. Then I put my feet up and say, you know, first of all, it sucks Grandpa's not here to see this, but secondly, this is what I'm in this for, right?
Yeah, yeah.
This is why you turn your back on a career that took me 15 years to get to. This is why you turn your back on the money. You do all these things to then become excessively poor, unnecessarily for a long period of time, because here you are working with brewers with something beyond beer in mind and creating something that could only happen here, which is why I tell my friends who are German growers, you have nothing to worry about, because my honest hope is all these ultimately 50 acres of production never leave Atlantic Canada, because, you know, we get to a product that the hops don't leave here, but the beer does. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right.
So, like, my son goes out west or whatever, or goes to the Pacific Northwest to work and learn, or goes to Germany to work and learn from them. He proudly brings beer with him. That's like, this is my beer. This is our beer. You know, this is who we are. This is who you are. And the Munich Helles and all these beers are great, but this is what a Atlantic Canadian lager tastes like. And for the Germans who know beer, or the Americans who know beer, to smell and be like, man, this is super cool. You know?
Yeah.
And that's the process I'm after. Like, that's what drives me, you know. That's what's making all of this insanity happen, right?
Fucking love it.
Because we, we have a huge opportunity, you know. Because Maritimers are such nice people. People from other parts of Canada are great, too. But the support you get from the brewers and the community here is special.
Yeah, that's...
I got nothing to add to that.
Sorry. Yeah, I got nothing.
The air conditioning is on.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, guys.
When you talk about 50 acres here,
yep.
Over time, or what are we talking about in terms of kilograms or tons or whatever of, like?
So our hops are produced at about 12 to 1,300 pounds per acre, like for our top six varieties.
Okay.
So
right on. That's the factor. It's a lot of bales.
It's a lot of hops.
Yeah.
Yeah. So after the processing building's up, our storage building is the next thing to go up. And that's going to be like a 40 by 40 refrigerated building. That's going to be floor to ceiling bales.
And do you pelletize it by order, you said? Like if someone...
Right now, that's the plan initially. But we are going to start researching. I did have one year of data where it just immediately pelletized versus baled and pelletized. There are significant differences there.
Really?
Again, oxygen is for lager brewers and people who understand the esters and how those products degrade and head stability stuff. So alpha acids degrading into tetra alpha acids and stuff, which give you good beer head stability. That needs oxygen. And so like an acquaintance who's a hop farmer in Germany, she's like, you might want to be less efficient. And if a German would tell you to be less efficient, then there is a reason. You want a little bit of oxygen, but not a ton. So this idea is you get a skin of oxidation around the outside of the bale, where the central aspect of the bale is essentially completely oxygen-free.
Right.
So what you're titrating in is some oxygenation of the outer hops.
Mm-hmm.
And when you take a chainsaw and you cut through, and Phil loses his mind, takes the chainsaw, and chainsaws through a bale, you see the outer rim, which is kind of browned a little bit, and the center is a bright green. So, like, you're this is part of what knowledgeable brewers know. Like, when they do their plug, it's not just the central plug. They take a cross section of the bale, and they pull it out, and they can see, like, basically a glorified soil probe.
Yeah.
Here's the oxygenation amount. So we've been studying that as well and looking at where that number is, and we're talking about significant change, about 3 to 4% of the bale. So this isn't nothing, right?
Yeah.
So the idea of, we want to be more efficient, so we're going to cut baling out because baling's stupid, and we're going to pelletize them. It's like,
hold on, yeah.
I'm not going to say which country he comes from. United States. You know, we need to get this thing done. You don't want to be bailing. Y'all want to be going straight to pellets, you know? That's where the money is, man. You don't want to be up till 2 in the morning. I was like, I don't want to be selling a shitty product either, right? Yeah. And so when the German tells you to be less efficient, you got to be like, okay, well,
yeah.
Let's just hold the horses. And then then I started doing this research and went, holy shit. Sorry.
Oh, that's fine.
You're fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Holy crap. When I mix this bale up and pelletize it, everyone doesn't talk about the field berry and noble hops, but field berry is a critically important target to hit in noble hop production. Has to be there. Any trained European beer judge or the Pinnies, for instance, I know he picks that up like that. Is the field berry's not there, you have an unbalanced beer. It tastes like a tobacco, right? It just tastes like a cigarette, which some people like, but not most. So the idea is that, where does that field berry come from? So we did a trial where we brewed head-to-head, straight pelletized versus baled and weighted, and significant differences in the perception of tobacco went down significantly with the aged, with them baled and stored for a while.
Interesting.
So the tobacco amounts, when you look at the actual numbers, are exactly the same.
Right.
What's happening is, as oxygen is degrading some of the hops on the outside and giving you those esters and degradation products, is the field berry is becoming more prominent, right?
Yeah.
It's the rising tide kind of thing. So, you know, all of these things are being considered when you're talking about trading a flow. Now, if we're talking about a bittering hop where people aren't interested in extracts and they just want the highest amount of alpha possible, that's going to be straight to pellets. Because there's no interest in getting the finer points out of the Magnum. You get your kettle character from it, right? And those products are always there, and we harvest time for that. So you do get kettle character from the hops that you're boiling. But on the other side, all your aroma hops have to sit in bales, and conventional knowledge is around three months just to allow that process to happen at the right temperature. So driving my wife crazy, all these bales sitting in our fridge at 0 degrees versus -1 versus a lower temperature, and figuring out what temperature gives us the most efficient field berry character or the more fruity estery character. So we know, okay, when we have this massive facility, we're spending a lot of money to cool.
Right.
How cool does the building need to be? So how can we keep, and this is an environment thing, right?
What,
like, why would you keep it at -27? Like, in the U.S., they freeze the bejeebus out of it, which is fine because they're like, it preserves alpha acids. It does. And the colder it gets, the slower the degradation is. But there's a curve. And then, you know, we live on a planet where we need to stop burning fossil fuels, making it hotter.
Yeah.
And so why don't we just find out exactly what that temperature is, so we use as little of that resource as possible.
Right, because the energy usage to get from 0 to -27 is
massive.
A lot.
Massive. The amount of money these guys spend to refrigerate these hops and preserve them, like, perfectly, that's a huge investment, right?
Yeah.
And that's why Yakima Chief exists, right, is they share the costs.
Right.
So all these growers, with the Yakima Chief Grow Cooperative, which is an amazing business model, they share the cost of the refrigeration. But I mean, there's no question about it. Like, the hop storage indices for their hops is like negligible compared to what what an idealized curve is, right? So when you order from YCH, the hops you get are as best preserved as is essentially humanly possible.
Yeah.
You know, given that we live in an actual reality as opposed to an idealized state.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But for us, we have that's not necessarily our focus. Our focus is to know that. So let's say, for instance, you put the Zotzer in the fridge. It's been 3 months. We hit the target. We use Chris's fancy-dancy HPLC machine. Tells us, boom, we're there. Guess what happens? All the Zotzer gets pelletized. So, boom, that moment in time is now preserved in those nitrogen flush bags. Maybe we got to wait for the Hollow Tower middle fruit to age another month. Maybe it was ready a month before. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
So that's part of the baling is getting the ultimate product that's the highest value, most consistent product. And that's what these experienced hop growers are doing, right? And this is where I need my sons and my grandsons, right? Because to think I'm going to figure that out in my lifetime is ridiculous. Like, it's just not going to happen. They can just go and pour beer on my grave that tastes really good, I guess.
Let's go pour one out for Pops.
Yeah.
It always blows my mind, like, looking at the 150-year-old tawny port, right? Where, like, it's a
amazing
multi-generational production of a liquid.
Your kids don't even get to drink it. Like, it's just like,
I don't get to drink it. It's like $4,000 a bottle. But.
Yeah, well, yeah.
There's no one in this room that's drinking that beer.
No.
Unless a really rich drunk guy wants to be on the podcast, maybe. Hey, if someone out there want to share one, you guys can get on the show, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'll talk hops with you.
Yeah.
I'll tell you everything I know for one beer.
I think HC Hans Christian told me once that he was in Portugal and he just happened into like a wine shop that they had one of those things open.
this is why, you know, my grandfather would say beer is cultural, right? Beer is cultural. It's seated. I don't know that we've really put a huge, like, we don't have a beer style yet in Atlantic Canada. I know we will. And, you know, this is where this, you know, gets really awesome.
Yeah.
We may or may not see that, but it's like, eventually.
Yeah. But we're part of it, right?
Yeah.
We're part of that flow of getting better and you know, you guys are a huge part of this, and like the community at large is a huge part of this. Beer drinkers knowing what good beer tastes like and knowing and demanding a quality product.
Yeah.
You know, we're investing, you know, like I said, about $4 million by the time we're where we need to be to get one part of the process right. Think of everything Shoreline's invested, right?
Oh, yeah.
Huge investment, John and the guys. And this is just two ingredients, right? And then then you got the brewing process, which is another massive, right? And then you have to have the cultural inspiration to change, to do something creative, like artistic with the beer.
Yeah.
You know? And so that requires like a certain set of circumstances, right? Which is like a classic story. My grandfather would say, the Bavarians don't know how to drink beer. They don't know how to enjoy beer. In his spot, the convention was beer to be very low alcohol because the cultural expectation was after work, you had like 3 or 4 beers.
Right.
If you turned away after the second beer, you're telling the waitress or the waiter, the Stube, that you didn't like the beer. It was, I don't like this. Get this away from me. I'm going home early.
Yeah.
Or like you have a reason to go home. Your wife's pissed at you or something.
Yeah.
Whereas so that beer is like 3.5%, right?
Yeah.
That beer is inset culturally based on an expectation of how someone going home from work is supposed to behave in that society in that area, right? Which is a mix of Prussian, Austrian, Russian, Ukrainian, like, that group of people, that's what the expectation was. Now you go to Bavaria and the beers are like 4 or 4.5%,
right?
Which you drink like a maniac during certain times of the year, but the expectation culturally isn't necessarily to pound 4 beers every day after work, right?
Yeah.
So that beer is a totally different profile because the cultural expectation is totally different, you know? And I know in Atlantic Canada, we're culturally distinct. We all know that. We go to different parts of Canada. You can pick us out like a sore thumb. It's not hard. You know, you just hear the Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. You're like, all right, pal. Are you from around the bay? Like, what's your deal? You know? So, you know, the beer is going to grow to emulate that, to to do those things. So our beer is different than other people's beer. It just takes time.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's exciting to see that starting to take form and take
100%.
Or just see that people are thinking about it. Like, right? Like, that's the first step, obviously, is like having people have that mindset that, like, this is what happens over generations. Like, this is where we get to.
Not necessarily like this needs to happen now. Right. In this exact second.
You don't need to, it can't be forced, but it's like.
And you got guys, like, people with the skill and the training experimenting, like Jeremy's doing, like with, and like what Permos is doing with lager beers, like Wendy Papadopoulos has always done, you know, like Jeremy's doing, like Tatamagusha is doing, you know, like really, and I was up in Bathurst and did Four Rivers and 13 Barrels. Awesome beer. Yeah. Just awesome.
Yeah.
Like, really, like, kind of knocked, I was like, okay, here I am. And it's like, damn.
I had one recently from one of those breweries. A buddy of mine is from Dalhousie. He was up that way, I think, brought me some back. Some good beer.
Yeah, man, it's fantastic beer. So, you know, like, and they're trying stuff, right? Like, there's this barrel-aged, I believe it was a stout. It was in Cognac Bureau. And me and Naomi shared a bottle last night, just kind of putting our feet up after a long day. And, man, it was a super complex beer. It was young, so it wasn't barrel-aged for a huge long period of time, but just soured, just the right amount, you know? Yeah. And you're just like... And that cognac flavor was really interesting, but it's different than other cognac stouts that I've had from the Maritime. So it's like maybe the stuff in the air in Bathurst turns this beer into something that's different.
Right.
Yeah. That's the part to me. Like, the Maritimes is, like, we're awesome. And I know this is where this is headed, because people don't give a shit about convention. They don't, like, they know beer styles and they produce beer styles, but, you know, a brewery like Two Crows, like Grimross is another one, you know, where they do lager beers on the screws and they turn around and do other crazy weird stuff.
Yeah.
And so, like, that's the part that's, you know, this is where the experimentation is where, and this is the part that I'm, like, super excited to actually have a significant amount of reasonably priced product so I can start becoming actually part of that process, you know, versus what I've been doing. The 2-acre thing is kind of like splashing in the kiddie pool.
Right.
It sucks. Like, and like, every year I come and it's the same thing every year. Is Steven would stand there just like this, look at the hops, and look at me. You're like, do I got to say it again? It's like, go ahead and say it. Is this it? Where's the rest of the pallets?
Yeah. Like,
Steve, I love you, but I hate you.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Wendy is the exact same. Mark's, you know, Jeremy, everyone, all just like, you know, let's get this thing going, man. Like, we're impatient. We're running out of time here. Like, you know, brewing is brewing. It's a business. We got to do what we got to do. And so the accounting side has to be on the screws. And honestly, that was the reason for a significant amount of the delay, right, is making sure the dollars and cents lined up. Farming is a business. Mm-hmm. It's great to talk about all this social stuff, but at the end of the day, mama got to get paid.
Yeah.
So like, you know, you got to be able to show that this is an efficient, productive business that's going to be sustainable.
Yeah.
And so, like, so when people say to me, you mean to tell, as some person from Michigan said, you mean to tell me you've been planning this for 10 effing years? He's like, that's very un-American. That's literally what he said. He was like, that is the most un-American thing I've ever heard. He's like, you got to be Canadian or something. He's like, who plans for 10 years? I was like, you know how long it takes for someone to come up with $1.5 million? Even like us living, not like most surgeons, like at all.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice vacations. Nice car. Like, my kids got the clothes. They went to private school because that was a priority for us. But other than that, you know, they would look at the other surgeons' kids and be like, man, I got this stiff. My dad sucks. I got to beg for a slip and slide, you know? These other kids are friggin' ripping on their brand new skidoos, and I got to, you know, hump dad's leg to get a used snowboard, you know? It's because they're piling all the money into this, saying, okay, this is where this is going. And you know what? $20,000 here, $40,000 here. We got it. The first thing we got was our pellet mill, because that's the hardest part to get right. Then we're going backwards and blah, blah, blah. And at the end of the day, now you're like, okay, so now I can look Steven in the eye and say, your brewery, you got to make your money. This is what you need the hops to be priced at. This is the price we can do. And that's why the delay. Getting to that point and knowing that that's the point. You know, I had a meeting yesterday with Finance PEI, big meeting, talking about financing our processing facility, and it sounds like they're very, very much on board. And at the end of it, for him to say, I can't imagine how much patience it took at year three when you realized you could do this and you could do it well, to stick to your guns and then wait another 5 years to go off now. And that's all my grandfather in my ear saying. Yeah. It's not yet, not yet, not yet.
Right.
You don't know what you're doing. You got to get to the point where you know where the flavor profiles land and the final business numbers come through to say, like, we're going to make,
now
we're gonna
we
make
can,
money.
Yeah.
Now we can do it.
Yeah.
Now, you know, the 700-page business plan, and you give it to the guy and say, this is, it's literally 700 pages. Like, this is everything we've done. These are the papers. These are the research projects. This is why we do it this way. This is why we do it that way. And you can, you know, then look a brewer in the eye and say, like, I know what I'm doing, you know. And that takes, you know, I remember the first time I had a Blanche de Chambly. I was like 18. And it, I remember like, what is this?
Yeah.
And then I had the second glass and it was like, rut-row, you know? This isn't Molson Canadian anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're just like, you know, that's when the session I inherited this from my grandpa, you know, when I was 9 and I'm working on the farm. What do you think I got for working my absolute ass off? A little snipchen of Alpine, man.
Yeah.
You're 9 years old. You're just like, I did a good job today.
Absolutely.
I worked way harder. And Grandpa looked me in the eye and said, you know what, my little buddy, you know, rub me on the head. You earned it.
You
Here's
earned
your
beer.
Alpine, buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. Oh,
nailed it. Totally nailed it. And then you're just like, and then the amazing part is to be alive during a time when, like, everyone else is realizing that, too. And the craft beer revolution and all this stuff's all happening in my lifetime. And it's like, how many lifetimes, you know, have come and gone, like, since we left, had to leave, you know, with poles burning behind them when they left as the Russians rolled through.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like,
yeah,
I just, this all just lined up perfect, you know? So, yeah. Sorry, I can't shut up.
No.
I love this stuff.
Yeah.
It shows.
I apologize.
Yeah,
yeah.
No,
we do too.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's good.
We came here for it.
What am I gonna?
Everyone
add?
Listening, I'm sorry. But if you want to ever come visit the
Both
farm, please do.
Yeah. So you said it kind of sounds like you're gonna have some availability for visitors,
yeah,
or whatnot.
We,
once
we're
you're
building
up.
A conference center in. There's a conference center, and we're going to be doing tours. There's going to be a scaffolding
and
structure built, so you can observe. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
Where you can walk up and look over the hop yard.
Yeah.
I need, when we do the grand opening, I did brew a Weizenbach that's now barrel aging in Jordan Stetson. I got him to pitch line barrels.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So I've got a Weizenbach beer chilling out right now in the basement.
Yeah.
And we're going to bottle it, and when cool people come to the farm, they'll get... Because I'm allowed to give booze to whoever I want. I can't sell it, but I can give away booze to whoever I want, whenever I want, how much I want. So you want to come to the farm and hang out and be cool? There's hopefully going to be some... And that's all with Shoreline Malt and my hops.
Yeah.
And actually some Island Malt in one of the batches. So...
Nice.
Yeah, just to draw people here, because again, I have a hard time keeping my mouth shut, so I gotta have someone to talk to. My dog is kind of done with all this, so
yeah,
he just rolls over and goes to sleep. You guys are off to Bogside next.
We are.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks so much, man.
Yeah.
Like, this is I feel like I learned a lot.
Oh man, I'm super happy.
I'm going to have trouble like processing the day, I think, from like a an agriculture perspective, I think. Just like the morning on shoreline and going up to visit the fields, and now all this, it's like it's a lot. Like it's,
we really take huge pride in what we do.
Yeah.
And I know Island Malt Company is great too. I know those guys. Part of the reason why, you know, coming to the PEI feels right is knowing that, like, we're here in the same place at the same time, like, with the exact same vision for what this is and what we can make it into. And it's why, you know, the first time, the first Milosh, which was both fires, it was like, you know, calling up John and saying, John, like, I'm not like an emotional guy, but this is a huge, like, I feel like a burning inside of me.
Yeah.
And it's like that, that I need to keep going, you know, like we need to keep going. We need to keep doing this. And,
yeah.
Cause it was like, you know, this is a maritime beer, you know?
Yeah.
This is like Nova Scotian brewers. I know one of those hicks got to be from New Brunswick in there somewhere. Maybe it's Miles. I don't know. He likes Pink Floyd a lot.
It's true.
So he might be the one from New Brunswick. I don't know. Anyway, and I really appreciate you guys, like, what you guys are doing and like, the posts and stuff and making this visible, right? Making it, like allowing me to speak to you and others about what's happening and hopefully, you know, getting continued support from beer drinkers in the Maritimes and elsewhere to support what we got going on.
Yeah, I think that, you know, obviously like I said before, a few positives from the COVID thing is like spotlight on sort of the local production, how important it is and what it means. And
yeah, I went against a lot inside of me, and I've stopped drinking German beer during COVID.
Really?
I always had a Bitburger in the fridge, always, at all times, and replace it with local beer, and I don't miss it one bit. When I fly to Germany, I'll drink German beer. But
yeah.
And so even me as a producer, right, so this was me showing how hypocritical I am a little bit, but the crazy part about it is the cost point was virtually no difference in my pocketbook.
Yeah.
And here's the money all staying in, you know, Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, and PEI. Yeah. And
that's just tough, right? It's tough to be like, hey, buy my local hops for your local beer, but I'm going to buy beer from over there. Like,
yeah, that was dumb. Like, and I never even like drew the line. It's just like, oh, Bitburger is just what I drink. And my wife bought it for me and put it in the fridge. And
yeah.
I'm just like, COVID comes and I'm like, what the hell am I doing? Like, this is stupid. Like, why am I doing this? Like, because this beer isn't cheap. So why? And it's like, oh, it was a certain flavor that I was looking for, I think. And then I took 15 minutes and was like, okay, so Fixed Link, awesome beer. Beach Tier, great beer. How about the one-offs from the After Midnight series? Great.
After Hours.
After hours.
Yeah.
Great beers. Flora. Bogside, I mean.
Yeah.
Like, the North Lake. Their Rogan beer is like, exploded my brain out of the side of my head when I first tasted it.
Tony,
I felt like I was
transported
back to Germany, and so we got all these amazing beers here. So it's like, why the hell am I doing this? This is dumb. So I'm not buying it ever again.
Yeah.
And hearing other people saying the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because brewers need us to support them. Otherwise, I don't have a job. I could talk about this for 12 hours and bore the shit out of everybody. and then it's, on top of that, it's pointless because, you know, I got no one to sell my hops to.
Right, yeah.
So you're right. COVID really, like, for me myself, really shone a spotlight on my hypocrisy. But also, it actually, like, really highlighted how freaking great the beer is here now. It wasn't always the case, you know.
No, yeah.
Nope. Like, my hops were terrible, too, so I'm not throwing stones, but, like,
When you mentioned Lone Oak, Bogside, you mentioned Flora, it's like, or even the After Hours Off series, Lane, like a couple years ago, those weren't options, right? Like
Bar that's None.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then in Summerside there, Evermore. It's just like, yeah, I grabbed a bunch of Evermore there recently. Awesome beer. You know, Moth Lane's obviously, their Weizen beer is amazing. Bar None's, their IPA is awesome.
Yeah.
You're just like, damn, like I could fill my fridge just with beers from PEI.
Yeah. You know? I used to go to school with a girl who, her parents live near Bar None, and we'd do, I'd do growler swaps with her dad. She'd go home for like a long weekend. I'd send her with a growler from something from Nova Scotia, and he'd send back like a Bar None growler. Awesome. It was like a good exchange program we had going for a while.
And very consistent beers, right? So they've been around long enough. Mm. So you know, like, their IPA is
They're pushing 10 years now, I bet. Yeah. Like, this is 2012. I think we were doing that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And that's just PEI.
Yeah.
You know? Like, that's just PEI. So you guys have an embarrassment of riches in Nova Scotia. Huh. And New Brunswick is also, like, you know, this is the stupid part, is like, my wife confiscates my Visa card when I travel, because like I'm no Chris McDonald. Like I don't have like multi-level pallets in the back of my car to store beer to illegally ship around the country. No, I'm joking. It's just like, but she's like, seriously, okay, you're operating on a $200 limit. So then I go to Bathurst and I just like, oh, I'll try one, and it's just like, and then I'm walking out, I'm like, shit, I think I just spent my limit. And I haven't even gone to Four Rivers yet. But I sat down there and they had a Munich lager. And okay. I was just like awesome beer. Yeah. Like just the body was perfect. So drinkable, nice little snap of bitterness at the end, full bready, like all nice, some floral, just a little hint of mint, and you're just like, man, like, okay. I'm getting in trouble. I'm making a decision here on purpose, and I'm just doubling my spending limit, and you're just like, every community is like this now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and like I heard some rumors, like there's gonna be a brewery in Cornwall soon, which is awesome.
Mentioned that last night.
Yep. Brian Carver and just awesome.
Brian's great. I mean, we used to be able to even. When we started this podcast, it was kind of each weekend you could kind of go round up the new releases, and now it's like, not only can I not afford to buy them all, I don't have time to drink them all, I don't even know what they are. Like, I read the AC Beer blog every Friday afternoon on my lunch break at work or whatever. I'm just like, I don't.
And we're gonna have to give you
what,
like,
are
an,
all of
like,
how long
is your break? An interferon injection keep your liver from exploding.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I'm reading through, I'm like, what are these? Who is this brewery? I don't.
I haven't got any Delta Force yet, but I got to get my hands on some of their beer.
Yeah, I haven't either, but I know they went pretty quick when they did that release the other day.
Yeah,
they've been doing stuff.
Oh yeah, for a long time.
Forever.
Yeah,
I'm sure we'll see some more.
No doubt. Yeah.
I'm actually heading to Bogside too, so I might follow you guys.
Okay,
just pick up beer to go home with.
Beauty.
Yeah. Sick. Sweet.
Right on.
Well, thanks again, guys. Appreciate you coming.
Thank you.
You know what? After that episode, I need a beer. Something
there
hobby.
There wasn't time to drink one.
No,
we didn't. It came up.
Not that it wasn't offered.
No, it's we were drinking happened, water at first because
there's just no place to stop.
There's like, Josh is just such like a wealth of information.
Yeah,
and like also a wealth of perspective on a lot of things.
Right. Yeah, and if you haven't heard of Island Hop Co. or the predecessor of sorts,
Darling Island.
Yeah, it's obviously, if you get to this point, you know, it's been a long time in the making to get to this point. So it's exciting times ahead for Island Hop Company, which means exciting times ahead for, you know, maritime beer,
yeah,
etc.
And like the deep involvement within, you know, with how far into the development process there have been like producers, even like beer producers, in like, I think helping Josh piece together his plan. He mentioned a lot of folks that he's worked with closely,
yeah,
in developing everything. I mean, of course, like all the work he's put in and the time he's put in with his family and everything to get things off the ground. I'm really excited. It's I hope that everything, because we're recording this a little bit ahead of the episode release. I hope that they, you know, everything goes smoothly with getting everything put into the ground and getting all those trellis strung. So, yeah,
it's when you think of like traditional, you know, beer destinations, you know that, like, sure, you think of the beer and the brewers and stuff, right? But those destinations, like, obviously Germany has a, you know, huge history, and that goes to Josh's, even his own background of, you know, growing hops and you know, grains and malt houses and stuff over there, right? So it's to becoming a beer destination is not just all about having breweries around. I mean, that's obviously a big part of it, but, like, it's the whole, excuse my East Coastness, but kit and caboodle.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, because that's the thing. I think we look to Germany for beer culture, for beer styles, but also for beer, for, you know, hops that are grown over there, for malt that are grown over there. Like, it's not just a...
literally all the things.
Yeah. All, even water profiles.
Yeah.
It's true. I just, like, I think it's really interesting. Like, I'm really looking forward to what that looks like when it's all finished.
Also
For our kids.
I'm looking forward, I'm looking forward to listening back and trying to catch a few more things, I think, too.
Yeah, I think my head was spinning through a lot of that. Just a lot of great information. It was hard to digest, like, in person. So
yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah, oh, exactly.
Man. Yeah.
Speaking of fascinating wealth of knowledge.
Oh.
How about our sponsor, Bishop Cellar?
Oh.
Bishop Cellar.
They are also just endless fountain knowledge.
You can find out anything you want about what they have in the store by just asking a question when you go there. Go to the store. Make sure you follow all their precautions that they have laid out. And yeah, when you're downtown, stock up on some beer, some wines. Maybe, I don't know, grab a nice bottle, grab some something to go, and walk up to Citadel Hill and...
There you go.
Sit out there, have a little picnic. Nobody's going to tell anybody.
Certainly not us.
No, we're not going to tell anybody. I think we would just do it. It'll be fun. I mean, you know, if you get in trouble, that's your own fault for, you know, breaking the rules, but I can't help you with that.
Yeah, if you get busted, we've never met you.
But on top of that, you can also, if you're feeling like not putting pants on, you should definitely stay home and go to bishopcellar.com. You can order beer, wine, spirits to be delivered to your door. If you live in Nova Scotia, that's where they'll deliver to. If you spend $150, they will send you your product for free anywhere in Nova Scotia. You can also choose a local delivery option, I think, for a little bit less than that.
Yeah.
Well, not that the delivery fee is $150, but...
The local delivery thing, the last one, this would be a while ago now, a month or two, but it's like almost down to the minute.
Really?
The tracking in town, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, so your delivery would get there. I wasn't, because I have delivered to the warehouse, I wasn't actually there, but it said like 9:59 or 10:07, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
And that's when it got delivered.
Amazing.
That's impressive.
Can't be beat.
Yeah. So if you want to keep it tabs on what's going on with Island Hop Company, just search Island Hop Company on Instagram. Which is pretty cool.
I'm looking forward to
it. You should be.
Yeah. It'll be in the past now. I'm looking forward to coming up soon, watching them get all the trellis in the ground and the poles and the plants and the whole deal.
Yeah. Very exciting times. You can check us out, 92 Brewcast, on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook.
Yes.
92brewcast.com. We'll get you all your old episodes. You can catch up with the rest of our island trip. You know, you can, if we still have some glassware, I guess you could use that, one of those channels to get in touch with us.
Indeed.
We're still selling them for $10 a shot. Donation button there if you feel like it. Other than that, I don't think we have anything in the pipe after this one.
We do not. Not presently, no.
That's all right.
By presently, I mean waiting in line for the ferry.
All right, fellas. Well, I guess this also wraps up the trip, hey?
Indeed.
Right.
It was a good rip.
Feel pretty...
crushed it.
Yeah, feel pretty good about this one.
I think it'll be...
Assuming this boat doesn't sink, we crushed it.
Well.
Listen.
This will not age well.
Yeah. Nobody's going to be looking for this if the boat sinks. What about the lost episodes?
That's right. Divers go to the bottom of the Northumberland Strait to try and find the SD card. All right.
That's it.
And cue the guitars.